Hi, everyone. Welcome to the International Black Summit Interview Series podcast. This is a podcast that was created to give us an opportunity to interview current and past participants and facilitators of the International Black Summit. And for those of you who don't know about the International Black Summit, we're an organization that was created in 1991. And our purpose is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. So my name is Grace Lawrence, and my co-host tonight,
Glenn Greenwich.
So Glenn and I will be interviewing Alexis Gumbs this evening. So Alexis is a current and past participant and facilitator of the International Black Youth Summit. And so we'll get into that a little bit in a moment. But first, we just would like to ground ourselves in the declaration of the International Black Summit. So to find out more about us, you can go to our website at blacksummit.org. That's blacksummit.org. And for those of you who are watching on YouTube, as opposed to listening to us on a podcast platform, you'll be able to see on YouTube the declaration of the International Black Summit come up as one of the pages in our website. So Glenn, do you want to go ahead and ground us in the declaration?
Absolutely. Thank you, Jackie Grace.
Thank you, Glenn.
The declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you. Thank you. So before we have Alexis join us in our virtual studio here, I just want to read a little bit about Alexis. And I think that this is going to be an interview. I know that we have been very much looking forward to having Alexis with us this evening. And I think that everybody who's listening or who's watching will really enjoy our conversation tonight. So Alexis Pauline Gumbs is cherished by a wide range of communities as an oracle and a vessel of love. Drawing over 25 years of experience as a writer and facilitator, her inclusive practice finds us and brings us into the ceremonies we have always needed. Alexis was blessed to learn the loving practice of facilitation as part of the facilitation team of the International Black Youth Summit from 1998 to 2004 and in many other settings. Alexis's critically acclaimed books include Undrowned, Black Feminist Lessons from Marine Mammals, Dub, Finding Ceremony, M Archive, After the End of the World, Spill, Scenes of Black Feminist Fugitivity, and Revolutionary Mothering, Love on the Front Lines. Each of those books published from 2016 to 2020. Alexis was honored with a Whiting Award in nonfiction in 2022 and lauded for creating modern fables that offer new methods of feeling. Alexis is also a 2022 National Endowment of the Arts Creative Writing Fellow. In 2020 to 2021, Alexis was awarded a National Humanities Center Fellowship to work on her forthcoming biography, The Eternal Life of Audre Lorde. Alexis has taught in many settings, including as Winton Chair of the Humanities at the University of Minnesota, Evans Chair at Evergreen State University, and Distinguished Visiting Professor in Africana Studies at Barnard College. Alexis and her partner, Sangodare, have received many honors, including Advocate 40 Under 40, Features for the Decade of Work to Create an Intergenerational Living Library of Black LGBTQ Brilliance, called the Mobile Homecoming Project. Alexis lives in Durham, North Carolina, where she nurtures and is nurtured by a visionary creative community while scheming towards her dream of being your favorite cousin. So welcome, Alexis. Welcome, welcome. Join us. Glenn, if you could give her the capacity to unmute herself as well, that would be great.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Welcome. It's so great to see you. It's so great to see you and be with you tonight. So if we could set this up, are we set up with the three of us spotlighted? Let me see.
Alexis is.
Yeah, so if the three of us could be spotlighted, that would be great. Perfect. Thank you.
It is. We're good. Yep.
Thank you. We're good now. Thank you. So, Alexis.
Hi.
Hi.
So good to see you.
It's so good to see you.
It's been too long.
Yes. Very long time. Yes.
It's so great to have you here with us. And one of the things that we mentioned to you, one of the reasons that we created the podcast was just to have an opportunity to hear from participants, facilitators, people who have engaged with the International Black Summit, what the International Black Summit has been for them. Just starting initially with how you first learned about the summit, what your first exposure was or your first event was, and then going into a little bit about your experiences with us, the distinctions that you use in your life, all of that kind of stuff. So let's start with your first, like, how did you first find out about it? What was your first event? What was your first exposure? All of that.
Yeah, well, so I am a third generation International Black Summit participant because my grandmother, Lydia Gums, was involved in the summit. My parents and my aunts and uncles have mostly attended the summit at least once. And my generation, I mean, we also grew up, you know, our parents did the Landmark Forum. My siblings, my cousins and I, we did the Forum for Young People. And so when the summit came to Atlanta, and I think this was in 98, that was my first time actually getting to attend International Black Youth Summit. Now, I had been hearing about, because my parents had been in New Orleans at the summit, and they had talked about, you know, how Malika was a stand for there to be a youth summit. And so by the time the summit came to Atlanta, I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to participate. And that was my first experience. And it was such a powerful, I mean, there's really an embodied memory of being in that room with Malika and Falami and Mike and Willa and so many, I mean, Wambui, so many phenomenal young people who were young, but older than me, but still young. And I just felt absolutely invigorated by their power, their ability to hold space for us in conversation, the realness and honesty and vulnerability that they showed, even in their leadership. And I think that that's what had me commit to continuing to participate in the summit and, you know, eventually to join the facilitation team.
And did you say how old you were that first event? Do you recall?
Well, if it was 98, I would have been 16 years old.
Okay. And about how old were they, the older youth that you were looking up to?
They were probably like 18 to 21. I think that they were, some of them were in college. Maybe some of them have just finished college. Yeah. So I saw them as almost like older siblings, you know, like we were part of the same generation, but I continue to look up to all of them, but I remember at that time really looking up to each of them so much.
So at that time, you know, coming in 16, you know, that whole sweet 16, beginning to explore shifting from being a child into being a young adult, sort of in that growth phase, and coming into that first summit, it sounds like you were ready to continue right away. Like it wasn't like you had to be, you know, taken kicking and screaming to the following events, right?
No, not at all. Like I was passionately wanted to continue to be at these events. And I think it is actually what you say about that time of really moving into responsibility for what my experience would be in the world and seeing the facilitators of the International Black Youth Summit as exemplars in that. You know, like if I am at the stage of my life where I can't say that my entire existence has been constituted by my parents or my guardians or my teachers or other authority figures in my life, what do I want that story to be? How do I want to relate powerfully to my own existence? And I felt that the Youth Summit was a really exciting, supportive place around that. And there wasn't, though, you know, I was involved in other youth empowerment work, and though I was involved in a teen newspaper in Atlanta by teenagers and for teenagers, and had the opportunity to see other young people, you know, who had incredible ideas and were inspiring, there wasn't a space that was a visionary space of Black youth that I had experienced up to that point. And I was like, I belong here.
So that was the piece, the visionary part of the work that you hadn't been present to or available in other places that you heard here in the International Black Youth Summit. Mm-hmm. That's very good. Okay. Because of course, you know, you know very well that vision is one of our foundational conversations in terms of entering the conversation and, of course, building on it and using the tools and the skills. What else did you hear?
Glenn, let me ask you before you go into that question. 1998 was Alexis's first event, first International Black Youth Summit. Do you know how long the Youth Summit had been around at that point? I mean, we recently, Alexis, if you don't know, we did recently interview Malika. Mm-hmm. And so we talked a little bit about the whole forming and her idea and, you know, people coming together to create the Youth Summit. Do you recall what that first?
Yeah, of course. The first one is 1995. So 1994 is when the idea got announced to the adults, basically, that they were going to have a Youth Summit. And so we used that next year to really solidify, well, what is the training going to be and how will we qualify facilitators, youth facilitators, to be facilitating at the front of the room. And so we had some prerequisites and some training they had to do along with the senior facilitators. So at that point in time, it was about, you said 98 or 99, you said 99. So it was 3-4 years in.
I think it was 98, but it could have been 99.
Okay.
99 was in Jamaica.
Oh, no. Okay. So then it was 98
because it was 98. Okay.
It was 99 was my first summit. That's why I remember.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had this idea, you heard something around vision and you wanted to pursue it. What else were you drawn? What else drew you to the International Black Summit? You know, obviously your parents, your grandparents, because your grandfather did do the summit too, didn't he?
No, he didn't. He didn't do the summit.
Didn't? Okay. He just hung out with us when we went to Anguilla. Okay.
Yeah. But also definitely a visionary.
Yes. Yes.
For sure. But not the type of person to sit inside a room at that stage of his life. He had decided to not do that anymore. But yeah, I think this visionary, and even, you know, hearing the declaration, I read the declaration along with you, Glenn, because, you know, this is my training, is that we all say it. So I was also saying it along with you on mute. And it's just still such a powerfully moving document to me. I mean, when I hear these phrases, and you can hear, like, if listening to my own bio and listening to the declaration, I was like, oh, okay, like literally nurturing relationships is in my way I introduce myself to the world. And this idea of our community as a contribution to the transformation of the universe, that is core to me. And I think that that really is what called me. And, you know, when we make the distinction of it being a visionary space, that is very different from, you know, being a young person who's involved in things that are around, well, if Black youth are underprivileged or we're under-resourced or we're disenfranchised, or, you know, all of this language that that speaks to lack and reproduces that lack in certain ways. This, I have always known that our community is a contribution to the transformation of the universe. You know, so like when I was a little kid, I was writing praise poems about my grandfather and my grandmother and my parents and my uncles and aunts, because I was just like, oh, you know, like there's just something about people and in my experience in my core communities about us as Black people that is cosmic, transformative, to me, indescribable. But the exciting thing, and this continues to be the exciting thing for me as a writer, is to still try to describe it. And so it really did feel like a coming home to be inside this conversation where that is a shared understanding. You know, like, yes, we get caught up in our conversations. Yes, we are in upset sometimes about the things that are happening on the news or what's showing up in our families or what's showing up in community. But we understand that the Black community is a contribution to the transformation of the universe. And it's something that's so enlivening. And I believe that as a starting point, it really makes everything possible. And so it was really affirming to hear that, to say that, to be in a room full of people all saying that, when that's something that I feel like that's the spark of being that I was sent into this life with, you know, really to celebrate this cosmic Blackness, this transformational miracle that is our people. And it feels and felt at the time really good not to feel in the minority in that belief, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about that connection between the declaration that Glenn presents for us and then also your biography. And you actually noticing in that moment the connection between the two that you saw for yourself. So for me, I'm just kind of curious. We typically ask this question later, but I'm curious now, because we say that the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. Mm-hmm. And so many of us state what our vision is. And so can you state what your vision is?
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah, I haven't had the opportunity to do that in this way for a while. Yeah, my vision is for us, all of us, to be love, to be connecting points of love from all directions, to have access to love from all those living, all those who have ever lived, all those who will ever live, and all life, even beyond our species. And I know that my purpose is to be love. And my vision is that that's it, that we are here being love.
Beautiful. So beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
So given all that, when you left that first event, what did you leave with? What you came in and there was this excitement and this enthusiasm and like-minded people. So what did you leave with? What did you have at the end of this first event that you attended?
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I think there were many insights and, it's interesting as someone who's writing a biography of someone right now and like reading her teenage journals, I'm like, wow, there's some certain things that are like so important and life or death when you're 16, you look back and you're like, but what, what does that have to do with anything? So I'm sure there were many things that were on that scale where it was like, oh, I don't have to have this particular story about my homework or my crush that I had, but I don't actually remember that in detail in this moment, though, if I do have the journals that I could go back to, or maybe my biographer will look at one day if I'm too mortified to ever look at them. But I know that what I came away with was this huge sense of possibility and a real desire for being with, like being with the other young people who were part of the Youth Summit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I just want to acknowledge how important it is to have our people, right? I mean, that's of course the idea of why these summit shares happen, why the sharing of the interview series is happening, and being able to have community. Because sometimes you think, I might have thought that I was alone, and it would be predictable that I would think that I was alone because I was often the only or one of very few Black students in predominantly white elite educational institutions my entire education, right? So I had this conversation about like, nobody gets me, I'm all alone here. That conversation was very present for me at that time. And the profound experience of feeling that I wasn't alone and that there was an abundance of people who not only were also Black young people, but who also were operating from this perspective of vision and who felt empowered to create spaces for other young Black people because they did it, that really allowed me a place to let go of that conversation of like, I'm alone out here in the universe and nobody's going to get me. And, that was huge for me to say, actually, I'm part of a huge network of people. And understanding that whoever was in that room was just like the tip of the iceberg. Because we claimed everybody, and this is what the summit did, we claim the whole Black community, like everyone on the planet. We say this vision moves through all of us, whether you're specifically at this gathering in person or not. And so that this expansiveness of reflection and affirmation was huge. And it was a new story for me. And I want to also acknowledge that it is really real. The ways that I'm thinking about like what it meant to be able to travel, with you, Glenn, with Bill, who's on the call, with Jackie Grace, like you really being someone who's like, yes, you can stay in my home while you're, a broke college.
Oh, I have to share that story.
Like, this is, I feel like there's understanding that our vision is reflected, but then there's the actual community that supports us in taking the steps to achieve our vision. And the Black Summit has been that community. Very specifically, you all have been that for me. And I'm just so grateful.
That's so wonderful, because what I'm present to, because you come from a loving, supportive, visionary family, but yet there was something else available in coming into this to see other young people engaging in the same kind of things that you were, the expansiveness, the vision, the passion, the expertise, and the support of each other. And so there was so I'm hearing that there was clearly a place that was offered to you or kind of, you know, embraced you. Mm-hmm. And what did that mean to you at 16 years old to have that kind of experience with the travel and the extended community that you now had access to?
It really affirmed the reality that everything is possible. You know, I think about when we went to Brazil, and I remember, you know, because here I am, I'm visionary now. I understand that we're speaking our declaration and our intentions, and we're enrolling the universe into it. And so I remember I had made a list of things that I wanted to do while I was still a teenager, right? So before I turned 20, these are things that are on my list that I want to have happen. And I wanted to go to Brazil. That was on my list. And I tried all these things. I tried to do a Brazil study abroad. It didn't work out. I tried this. I tried all these different things. And I was like, well, you know, here it is, May. I turn 20 next month and I have no ticket to Brazil. So it looks like this is one of the things on the list. And then I remember getting the call like, so we need somebody from the International Black Youth Summit to come to Brazil because we're, you know, doing the planning trip and to meet with the youth organizations and to look at the venues. And I was like, what? Like, it really felt like this nonlinear way of the universe responding. I set the intention and I took action towards the intention, and none of those actions resulted how I thought they would. And yet, and still, before I was 20 years old, indeed, I was there in Brazil, meeting all these other young people and the folks, you know, from the Steve Biko organization, and seeing all these murals and really the opportunity to in Brazil, also in Ghana, also, you know, in the Caribbean, to meet other Black young people who were living out their visions, right? And coming together in powerful ways and thinking about Blackness in their context in ways that were relevant to them and that were different from my context growing up has been so important. It's been so important for, I feel like I already had a cosmic inkling, you know, about what Blackness is, but the expansiveness to see it playing out. And of course, you know, wherever we went, of course, there were people from all over the world who came to the summit from beyond even the host countries that we were in. So yeah, I do not think that the way, you know, I, as a scholar, as an educator, and as a writer, I am theorizing Blackness all of the time. And the way that I'm able to theorize Blackness is expansive, inclusive, and dynamic in a way that is very much shaped by my experience of being able to witness that, you know, and like hear people talk about who they were and what their lives were and what their situations were in a way that allowed me to understand that there's a connection there, but it's not walled in by any one national experience of Blackness, any one generation either, you know, because this was always operating on an intergenerational scale. And I think that there's, I mean, who knows, you know, it can be a chicken or an egg thing. It could be that I just so resonated with this process in the summit because I desired that expansive experience, or it can be that because I had that experience with the summit, that's why that expansiveness has been able to bloom inside me. Either way, you know, this is I believe this is what is meant to be. And I know for a fact that even though, you know, thank goodness to my parents, to my grandparents, everybody who invested in my education, because I have had huge educational privilege, that I know I wouldn't have at the age that I was, I wouldn't have been in all these different places without the summit. And I wouldn't have been there in a way that allowed me to really encounter other Black people, other young Black people, especially in the way that I did. It just, it wouldn't have happened at that time. otherwise. And, or maybe the more expansive way to say it is that it did happen at that time because of the summit, right? And that's a big deal. It's a very big deal. And I think that there's a formative impact that the summit has had on my life that I'm often so grateful for it. And I often wish I could replicate it, you know, for other people and be like, if you could just, you know, if you could just go back in time and experience this, then you wouldn't be looking at me like, why do you think everything's possible? Like, why do you believe so much in Black people, even though this? And I'm like, because I know, you know, it's like I've felt it. I've seen it myself. I have embodied and psychic memory that I can draw on in any moment. And because the summit is a conversation, because time and space are not limiting us, it really is possible for anyone to achieve in a particular moment. But that's, you know, part of my mission for favorite cousinship. You know, I'm just like, if y'all just believe me about how much love there is, then we can do this.
You know, it's interesting because for those who are listening, so we may have people who are completely unfamiliar with the International Black Summit listening. Mm-hmm. And so for those who are listening, before the pandemic, the last couple of years, our annual event has been virtual. So we did move to completely virtual for the past couple of years. But before that, our annual event was always somewhere in the world. And it was all over the world. You know, so the annual event has been held all over the United States. It's been held in multiple places in Canada. It's been held in London, England, Jamaica, Anguilla, Brazil, South Africa, Ghana, Kenya,
Belize.
I mean, the list goes on. It's an exhaustive list. Next year, we're slated to have one of the locations be in Antigua.
Great.
So to be a young person, to be a 16, 17, 18-year-old, you know, 21-year-old, whatever, being like, okay, yeah, this year I'm in Jamaica, next year I'm in Brazil, then I'm going to Ghana, you know, and I'm then actually engaging with Brazilian young people when I'm there, young Black people in Brazil and in Ghana, young Black Ghanaians, and in wherever it might have been, Jamaica, young Black Jamaicans, and in Detroit, young African Americans, and in Canada, where I am, young African Canadians. Mm-hmm. So I can see how that would have informed your life. And so I wonder, you know, some of the young people were there every year just because they wanted to travel. You know, conversation, no conversation. If I tag along with my parents, I get to go to this interesting place. I'm curious how much that was true for you, and when, and why did you choose to be a facilitator and not just a participant? Because you could have come every year and just been a participant, but you chose to actually step up and be a facilitator. And I'm curious, you know, why?
Yeah, I mean, so the conversation, was really the most important thing for me. And to this day, I think that the rigor of presence, like what it takes to stay present in a conversation, a transformative conversation about Blackness with a group of people who are 8 years old to like 25 years old, however old the age ranges are of the Youth Summit. I don't know if anyone who has not experienced the International Black Youth Summit itself understands how rigorous it is to stay in a conversation. People are 8 years old, they gotta pee. People are going through puberty, we're hormonal. People are, you know, just wildly self-conscious. I'll speak for myself, very self-conscious. And all of this is going on. And the task is like this huge group meditation like, stay tapped into this energy. And it's miraculous. And it's something that no one can ever take away from me, you know? And it's something that I've heard reflected back to me often, like, how are you so grounded? You know, like, how are you able to stay present in this situation, in this situation, in this situation, you know, working as a doula, being with people while they're giving birth, you know, all different situations that I've been in. And I'm like, oh, this is easy. You know, like, there's not like 20 children running around, you know, like, this is easy. Because my training has been, you stay present and you notice. And if you are like, why do I keep wanting to go to the bathroom? What am I trying to avoid within myself? Like, if you keep asking yourself these questions of what is it, if I'm stopped from being present, what is it? Like, what really is it about? How am I triggered? What's at the root of this? That is an incredible spiritual discipline. Now, and at this stage in my life, I'm like, oh, I get it. And sometimes being in the conversation is just me alone in this room, you know, meditating, but it's the same question. What is it that I'm trying to turn away from myself in this moment? What am I pretending not to know? You know, like, what could I possibly tell the truth about that would be transformative and empowering in this moment? I sit and look in the mirror and ask myself, you know, those questions. And so that's something that I needed. You know, the astrologers have told me I have like one earth sign. I'm like very much in the air, there's some water there. And it's like, how do you stay grounded? And it's through practice. And so the practice of actually being in that conversation and being able to be present with that conversation and attuned to the energy and where it would go, that's something that was so exciting to me. And I wouldn't have been able to necessarily articulate it at the time. But what I know is that there is a part of my spirit, maybe like my higher self, that knew, if you can do this, you will have something that will serve you for your whole life. You know, like, you will have something that you can use in situations where grief is coming up, in situations where people are blatantly attacking you for your beliefs, in situations that are not a beautiful space where you're surrounded by other visionary Black young people, but just spaces where you just need to be present. Situations where you're standing, witnessing police disrespecting young people. Like, you're going to need this in these situations that are where it requires rigor to be present. And so I think that was really the magnet for me. And if you're a facilitator, that means that you're not in that conversation once a year. It means you're in that conversation actually like all year, because that's how the facilitation works. And of course you have the different meetings leading up to the summit. And I think what I knew is that as much as I can be in that practice, I need to be in that practice. And once I realized, and I think I probably realized this, where were we? Maybe in Memphis. I think we were in Memphis, and the youth summit's theme was around love, like defining love, our definition of love as young people of African descent. And I think that was when I stepped up as a facilitator. And
the passion exercise.
Yeah. That was you. it felt like a calling, you know. I was like, oh, I felt my responsibility in that moment to hold that space and to, you know, stand there with a marker until like we had a collective definition of love that we all felt as love. And after that, I was like, this is part of my responsibility. This is part of my role. It's my training, and it's my gratitude at the same time. you know, because, and by that point also was really important that the conversation of the summit had been important for me. That summer, I had been able to actually speak to and confront somebody who had perpetrated sexual violence against me. At the summit, I called that person, and I had the story. I would never be able to speak to that person. I would never be able to even speak about that harm. But that conversation and the supportive space of the Youth Summit brought me into my voice in that particular way. And I'm a strong believer that anything that can save my life can be shared. There's a form in which it's shareable, and I have a responsibility to find that form and be part of that sharing. And so I think that that's another reason I was really activated. I saw what it made possible in my life in a very deep way. And if I know that that's possible, and there's a way that I can be part of other young Black people experiencing that possibility, experiencing their power, experiencing themselves as more powerful than they knew they could be in their own lives, how can I not? You know, like, that's the deepest level of invitation, you know, and I think faith in what that conversation could make possible. So I think that's what really activated me to want to participate and, you know, to continue to be in the, because not to say it was never hard to be in the conversation. And sometimes it was hard to be in the conversation of Youth Summit in relationship to Adult Summit and everything, money and resources. And what about, why are we in a hotel? You know, all of the things. So it's not to say that it was just so easy and wonderful that I was like, yay, this is great. It's like candy. Everyone have one. No, but I understood that the rigor I was experiencing there and who I was called to be by consistently showing up in that space was who I wanted to be by consistently showing up to my life and showing up for my community. And that's a deep yes, you know, like that. I think that that's the originating yes that I live inside of. And so even though as a Youth Summit, we actually never chose where the summit was, I wanted to be there wherever it was. And to me, even though I'm really grateful for the transnational experience of Blackness that is part of my experience, and also reflects my heritage, my transnational heritage, if it had been in Atlanta, in that same room, every single year, I would have been in that room, you know, like that. That's, yeah, that is what it meant to me.
Let me ask you this, Alexis.
Grace, before you go, let me just give some context to this. So a facilitator at the International Black Summit is not somebody who has a manual, who looks through, has notes. The International Black Summit facilitator is listening the space. So I want you to really get that. That's what Alexis is pointing to, is standing there, being present to what's occurring in the space and responding to that, including all of the conversations, the personal conversations that may be going on in your head that you may be confronted with. Maybe this is something that you've dealt with or dealt with in a particular way and have an opinion of it, but you're listening to what is being presented in the room in such a way that you can move the room forward. So that's the kind of rigor that we're talking about, the training, and that's available in the Youth Summit, in the young adult space, and the adult space. So that's part of the training and the rigor. Grace, back to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say one thing about what you just said and then shift. The depth of the conversation that you just pointed to, Glenn, and that you talked about, Alexis, for me, can't be overstated. Like the conversation goes deep, and it's something that has had me be wanting to come back to this conversation, because I'll go to other spaces and I'll like, okay, now let's go deep. Okay, so we're doing the surface now. Let's take a slightly deeper. Okay, we got to level one underneath the surface. Okay, I want to go to level 500 underneath the surface. Let's go to, okay, you want to go to level 2 underneath. Okay, I want to go to level 500 underneath the surface. In my experience, how few spaces there are that actually are willing to go that deep. So I just wanted to reiterate that there is a depth to the conversation that I personally haven't found elsewhere or in many other spaces. But the question that I was going to ask is, as you talked about the exercise around love and coming up with a definition of love that was true for the whole youth space that year, what do you recall about that definition? Do you recall anything about what the definition was that was developed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so love is, and we had all these words. It was like, love is connection, passion. Like, it was all of these words. Culture creates our expressions of love, but love is not limited by culture. Love is an unconditional is in there. I think it was one of the first words in there. Of course I could pull it up, but it definitely stays with me. And I remember this, the one of the most memorable moments in the conversation for me was, we were kind of at this point where it's like, are we writing about what love is or what love should be? Right? And a lot was coming up for all of us around, like, people who say they love us but had harmed us, and how love has shown up in cycles in our families in ways that could have been toxic, or, all of these different things. And I remember when we got to the point, because that's like, how do you make a definition of something if you're like, well, there's the ideal and there's the real, and we're like, philosophers, right? In the youth summit, like, is this Plato's ideal? Is this actual? And we got to this point. I remember saying, "What if love is what it should be?" And that, for me to even say that, was like, "Oh, it invited me to release all of my judgments of loved ones, all of the ways that I couldn't even receive the love that was there, because I'm analyzing, is it what it should be? Should it be this? Should it be that? All the shoulds. And in that moment, it was like, oh, we're creating a definition of love that is visionary. And we are declaring that love is what it should be. And so we have words like, love is this cumulatively, right? And so our definition of love, we were like, this stands. So if there is connection, but there's not respect, that's not our definition of love. That's just connection without respect, and that's what that is. We're saying that we can believe in love in a way that actually pushed against some of the ways that I know, speaking for myself, I had protected myself from believing in love because of my disappointment of what my experiences had been in the past, in all sorts of interpersonal relationships, familial or whatever. And it was a really powerful moment to say, like, we can actually hold this possibility of love. We could be rigorous in our definition of what love is and receive that and expect that and trust ourselves to do that, like, to actually love like that. And yeah, it was a really, really big deal to live inside of a definition of love created by young Black people in this conversation. And I feel like I still do live in that definition of love, even though I can't necessarily recite it in this moment. It's like, it's in here. And, you know, I think it speaks to what you were saying, Jackie Grace, which is that I think that something that was so liberating for me about being part of the International Black Youth Summit was that people did go deep, you know, and some of the things that the facilitators in that first youth summit that I was at shared, I was like, y'all are saying this, you know, like, you're saying this out loud. And that's because I was in a conversation, a very common conversation that's like, that I think also has shifted generationally, I hope. But I was not in a growing up with an unapologetic Blackness type of conversation. It was like, I can't share anything that's going to like make Black people look bad, or that I think is going to feed into people's negative stereotypes and violent actions towards Black young people, right? So like, I have to pretend to be perfect, because anything I do that's not perfect, it's going to feed into the negative conversation about who we are, right? And the Youth Summit was the first place where I heard or understood that actually our power, our transformation, our liberation depended on going that deep, you know, going that deep and not being like, well, why is it really hard for me to listen to this one person in the conversation that's speaking? Maybe I just don't like the sound of their voice. Maybe I just don't like the look of their face. And then like, okay, but deeper, what is it? And what does this remind me of? And there are even memories that I don't want to think about that are could be possibly there, or whatever it is. It really challenges us to go there and not make excuses for ourselves, you know, and not stop with like an easy explanation or a surface justification of what's going on. The deeper we can go, the more powerful a transformation is possible in that moment. And, you know, as Glenn was saying, as a facilitator, nothing can block that energy, right? That's the imperative. Like, not my excuses, my hangups, my conversation about people of a certain gender, my conversation about people of a certain age, like nothing can be allowed to block my presence to the energy of this conversation, because that's my commitment. And that means that I just can't sit here and lie to myself, because every one of those lies is a block to that energy flowing through. And I think that I understand, you know, that in so many spaces, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, Jackie Grace, but I know I've experienced in many spaces, and I can relate to, because I remember that there's this feeling like, if I don't hold on to these particular stories, these particular coping mechanisms, these particular like shutoffs, you know, that I turn on whenever we get too close to this topic, or whenever we get too close to whatever, if I don't hold on to those things, I will die. Like, I think that there's this belief that like, I will not exist past that moment, you know, like I will really, really die. And something that's so powerful about the conversation of the summit, and in my experience, the conversation of the youth summit, is it's like, you go there over and over again and you didn't die, you know, like that's what you learned. Like, oh, I still exist. Like, the world didn't end and I didn't fall apart. And it wasn't like nobody ever loved me again. And, you know, the people then threw me out the room or whatever, whatever I was afraid of, that was my excuse for not going there. It didn't happen. And so then the next time I'm like, oh, I can't go there because blah, blah, blah. It's like that embodied memory is there. Like, but girl, did you die though? No, that's not real. You know, like that's a story. Yeah, so I do appreciate that rigor and spaces where there's enough of us who know that we can go that deep and we're going to be okay. that actually becomes the culture of the space.
And let me add this as well. You were comfortable. You were in a safe place that you could share what you shared. And that was kind of like, you know, like the commercial talks about Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And literally, it was really with the body of people that you're able to go deep, heal yourself, really, really allow yourself to be healed in the process of listening or speaking. You know, so it wasn't just that the person speaking got the new insight or the new possibility, but listening, you also got captured by this new insight and this new conversation.
Absolutely.
So we talk a little bit about being present, and we haven't talked about what were the distinctions, what were your favorite distinctions that you used, because in the International Black Summit, for those of you who are new to the conversation, we use the distinctions. You know, Alexis talked about being present. So we use these distinctions of the summit to make sure that we stay present in the conversation. So give us a couple of the distinctions that, or at least your favorite. Let's start out with your favorite distinction that you enjoyed.
Well, of course, love, because we were like, we're generating this new distinction, love. That's got to be the favorite one. I think the most useful one, though, especially when I was in the Youth Summit, was definitely around trigger. Like, what is it to be? How does trigger show up? And so trigger is what are those moments where we react, right? And we react and it's like, it comes out of nowhere. It comes like fast like that. And we're not present. It's like that, we're not present. And therefore we're triggered, right? That's the example. And in the Youth Summit, looking at what that looks like, you know, it looks like suddenly I'm so tired. Suddenly I really have to pee, even though like I literally just did, you know, or I just need to get up and get more water. I have to. Which are pretty benign ways of a trigger showing up, because other ways a trigger can show up is you just go off on someone, or, you know, you do some action that is extreme. But understanding that trigger had that range, you know, like that I can be triggered and like nobody even knows but me. But what I know is I'm not present, right? And getting the facility to one, because the first thing is like recognizing that I'm triggered. Right? That's huge. Even if I have no idea what to do about this trigger, and even if I never do, and I'm never, ever present again, right? Which isn't going to happen. But really realizing it and being like, oh, right now, it's happening right now. You know, like right now I'm triggered. And that opens this doorway to what is that about? And what does this remind me of, or what's coming up for me, or what is my unmet need that is, you know, here. It opens the pathway for that journey, but it continues to make such a huge difference in my life to be like, I get that I'm triggered right now. And even if all I can say is, I'm actually going to not continue having this conversation because I realize I'm triggered. I'm going to have to go take a moment and maybe do some of my practices and come back into what I need to do, you know, in a range of settings. That is huge. And I realize now out here living in the world that 90% of people are often triggered and have no idea that that's what's happening, right? Because they don't have the distinction that's even a thing. Like, they're just like, I'm experiencing my life and I'm full of rage and I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff and it sabotages myself and others and I don't know why and I can't control it. And, you know, like that's how they would describe their experience. Yeah. And it's deep, because like, why would trigger be, you know, but that is, I would say that's been the most useful distinction for me to carry through, because of course I'm still in this lifelong meditation of like, come back to presence, right? What does it take to come back to presence? And then conversation itself is a distinction, right? And understanding that, you know, as you said, it's the, there's this possibility of transformation. Yes, in finding your voice and expressing something, an insight that you've had and sharing it, but especially in listening, you know, and listening, you know, like to be a listening for is, it's so huge. It's so huge. And to get to live my life really listening and understanding that this conversation, this transformational conversation, it's not only present when some people are like, we are gathering and we are in a transformational conversation. It's present. You know, it's present. Like I'm just sitting on the train that takes you around the airport. You know, like it's present. It's possible. And I'm listening. I'm always listening for it. And so that means that that distinction of how powerful listening can be means that I'm constantly in the practice of opening portals to receive the love that the universe is giving me in the form of whomever and in the form of actually whatever, you know. Understanding that I can be in that conversation at any time. And that conversation and listening are distinctions that are more than just the act of like hearing what someone's saying or talking with another person or even sitting in a circle and talking, you know, and listening with a whole group of people. The conversation is something that exceeds all of that and that I can tap into that at any moment.
And there's a level of trust. There's a level of trust that's available for you to participate as a facilitator and get yourself trained. So what I heard is this, all of this training has now prepared you to be out in the world and to allow the world to contribute to you in maybe ways that you didn't have the capacity. Because I really hear that you've increased your capacity to listen and to speak, but listening is one of those capacities that you've enlarged in so that you can be out in the world, listen, be present to what's being said or hear it fully so that you can be around your wits about what's going on.
Yeah, and that there's love there. And it's so expansive. I mean, like, you know, my most recent book, Undrowned, Black Feminist Lessons for Marine Mammals, it's like the listening that I am for marine mammals is definitely different than how most people understand what listening is. You know, people are like, what do you mean you listen to the marine? Like, you don't speak the same language as marine mammals. But absolutely, I'm learning from them, right? And I can listen for that. I can listen for, like, what the constellations are offering. There's a depth to what listening is that absolutely, I think, for me, started with the practice of listening in the conversation of the International Black Youth Summit in the form of sitting in that circle that has expanded such that I know that this conversation, when we say the transformation of the universe is what's at stake, I literally am in that practice. It's the universe, and the universe itself is Black, right? Like this is what I know. So yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Being in that training of being a facilitator in the International Black Youth Summit has expanded my listening. And I think it's just going to keep expanding.
It's so interesting for me to listen to you in this moment, and both of you actually, because I have never been involved in the International Youth Summit, International Black Youth Summit. Glenn is an adult facilitator of the International Black Youth Summit. You've been a past facilitator of the International Black Youth Summit. I've never been involved with it. And it's so interesting for me to hear you talk about the selection of distinctions. You know, you mentioned love and the conversation and trigger and listening. and how these distinctions, how you use them, how they're present for you in your life today. But what I hear and what I experience in you is just an embodiment of some of the foundational distinctions of the summit, and just a beingness of the summit conversation, having engaged in the conversation from such a young age. You know, I was 31 at my first internet, 30 or 31, something like that, at my first summit. And I came in, and a lot of the adult summit was older. And then you had the young people who were 25 and younger, who I actually wanted to go join, because but the difference of actually engaging in this kind of conversation with at that level of depth from that age, and how it just seems to have become a part of who you be in the world, and how you be in life, and who you be in life. For me, it's just very inspiring. And I feel like we're at a moment in the history of humanity where the opportunity for who we be in this world, we're just at a particular time. And to the extent that you are bringing that kind of listening to marine mammals, and I totally, you know, for those who are not familiar with the International Black Summit, that was not Glenn and I are like, sure. Okay. Like, of course, why wouldn't you be able to listen to marine mammals? Like, in terms of how we engage with the term listening, we use these standard words, but we do not mean the typical meaning that might be meant. So, but that kind of listening, bringing that kind of listening to all aspects of life right now, makes so much available for what we can create and how we can give back to life. And shift from the old paradigms that are no longer working into new paradigms that are regenerative and give life and are life-giving for us and for all other forms of life. So I'm just excited by what you said and by what's available in having the conversation made available to people at such a young age.
Mm-hmm. And let me add this, that the work that we do here at the International Black Summit has us be self-reflective. So we use these distinctions to really allow ourselves to kind of wonder, kind of explore, kind of do like a what if, and kind of expand that what we think that we know, and begin to discover what we don't know. And with others participating in this conversation, you get insights to different access points to the same conversation that you might not have thought of, wow, that's kind of interesting what you just said, Alexis. I hadn't thought about that. Or wow, Jackie Grace, wow, you said that? And so that is that kind of rigor that Alexis was speaking to earlier. It's like staying in that conversation, staying, keeping yourself grounded, keeping yourself present, so you can hear all of what's available to hear.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we don't, you know, we've been talking for a while. And before we let you go, we still have some time to go. We're not about to end the conversation quite yet. But I do want to make sure that we cover a couple of things before we do end the conversation. And so one of the things, first, I want to acknowledge that that Rain in our virtual studio audience.
Hi, Rain. It's definitely.
Has put a question for you that perhaps we will get to. If we don't, we'll cover it in the after in the after conversation. So for those of you who are live with us, and for those of you who are listening, we do have a live audience as we record, and you're welcome to join as we record these podcast interviews. And after the podcast ends, we have a Q&A session. So for those who attend live. So, but one of the things that I wanted to get to is just like what you're doing in your life now, now that we're really clear that the summit is, you know, all that and has been all that in your life.
Yeah.
But now that you've really gone and shared with us really, really in great depth the contribution that the summit has been and how you use it in your regular life and everyday life and in your work. So I want to kind of move to talking a little bit about your work. And you shared with us that you spoke at the Lincoln Center recently.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Because we were looking to schedule you, and you're like, oh, I can't do that night. I'm just going to be speaking at the Lincoln Center. That's all.
You know, all of my like date conflicts were like, oh, these are all miracles.
So if you could tell us a little bit about that, and also like share a little bit about like in terms of the people listening, if they were to pick one of your books, which book should they read first? You know, like that.
Yeah, what should you read first? So I'm a writer, and I continue to be a facilitator, and I am here to be love, right? So everything that I do, including all the writing I do, is all a ceremony to bring love through, really to connect love to love is the whole point for me. And even my writing, I see as an ongoing ceremony and as an ongoing listening. And the books themselves are artifacts of the ceremony that I've experienced that then become their own portable ceremonies that other people can experience because it's in the form of a book. And it's hard to say. I think that, well, I'll say, I trust my work. So wherever you start, you know, I think you'll be okay. but why not start with the most recent book? I mean, so it's the Undrowned, Black Feminist Lessons of Marine Mammals. I think it could be cool just because, you know, in the summit, we have this thing about unpredictable results, right? And for me, everything I've written is like, huh, there's something that is queer and transformative and unpredictable about it in there somewhere. But Black Feminist Lessons from Marine Mammals, you know, like the fact that I, not a marine biologist, you know, not even a scuba diver, you know, like that I would write a book that is called Black Feminist Lessons.
Can you give us one of the lessons?
Oh, yeah.
Can you give us an example of one of the lessons?
Totally. Ooh. Oh, maybe one that talks about grandma. That would be cool. Yeah, I'll find one. Here it is. Okay.
Okay.
So it's broken down into 19 lessons. There's a train. It's broken down into 19 lessons. I love that the train came right now because this is like about the freedom train. There's 19 lessons, this one, and there's multiple vignettes within each lesson, but this one is within Remember.
What number is this lesson?
Remember is number 3. So chapter 3 is Remember. Okay. This is on page 39 if somebody wants to look at it. I'm just gonna read, it's like a page and a half. Sometimes you will see an ocean dolphin in the river. One day, standing on a dock, in the Combahee River, looking for Harriet Tubman on the 149th anniversary of her successful uprising, my partner Sean Godari and I saw three Atlantic bottlenose dolphins. Message received. A year later, we returned as 21 Black feminists to honor the 150th anniversary of the Combahee River Raid together at Mobile Homecoming Project's Combahee Pilgrimage. Decades earlier, my grandmother, Lydia Gums, got a message from some Atlantic bottlenose dolphins too. They inspired her design of the Anguillian Revolutionary flag and seal and insignia, three bottlenose dolphins swimming in a circle. She colored the dolphins orange to represent endurance. The circle represented continuity. And though the revolution was short-lived, our listening continues. My sister has this symbol tattooed on her back. It lives on as the major logo and symbol of Anguilla to this day. And that day, at the Combahee River, I was wearing my grandmother's turquoise necklace. The sun was setting, and the dolphins did indeed look orange as they swam in a circle under the Harriet Tubman Bridge and went back out to sea. Bottlenose message, speaking across revolutions. I wonder what it means for an ocean dolphin to swim up a river. The bottlenose has a range across the whole planet, the whole open ocean, and yet sometimes they will choose the boundaries and specificity of a river, brackish water, narrow shores. Why? The message for me today is about specificity, about choosing a lane with all my infinite potential, about how my world-traveling grandmother made a commitment to a small island, about how strong we grow sometimes swimming upstream, and what the world can learn from the visibility of our message in a context that is specific enough to ring clear and to trust that all water touches all water everywhere. And for all of you, ocean dolphins, wondering, what am I doing in this river full of mud? Remember why Harriet Tubman went south. She didn't have to. She was skilled, untraceable. She could have been individually free, unencumbered. But if she wanted to tell an everlasting truth about freedom that would ring across the planet, a message for the ages, she had to live free in unfree space. It was the only way to bring us all with her. Thank you, my loves, for the bravery of your freedom in spaces of clear limitation, in spaces of muddy reality. Thank you for your decisions to do not what you could do, but what you must. Thank you for teaching the difference between privilege and courage, escape and transcendence, reaction and revolution. Your endurance inscribes an eternal alternative carried by bottles and bottlenoses, blood and breath. Message honored, message received.
Oh my goodness.
That's fun.
Woo! Mm, wow. Do that thing.
Wow. So what? So what are you looking to create next? You know, where do you go from here? I mean, you've had
the Lincoln Center in there. I still would
yes,
like to hear
Lincoln,
about that.
Yes, we want to talk about the Lincoln Center and beyond. So what are your plans?
Yeah. Okay. Well, Lincoln Center was amazing. I sent pictures to Aunt Una because I mean, I really was reading something I wrote, but the pictures, it looks like I'm like singing, you know. And my Aunt Una is a great opera singer, retired opera singer. So I had the opportunity to speak at Lincoln Center as part of this beautiful Songs for the Living event. And it was created by Toshi Regan, who is a phenomenal being. Toshi Regan is, if folks know Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, who created Sweet Honey in the Rock, and who was one of the freedom singers and who was a member of SNCC and a very important civil rights activist, Toshi is her daughter. And Toshi is a force in and of herself, and is yeah, 15, 20 years older than me. So she created something called Songs of the Living, which came out of this Parable of the Sower work that she's doing. She created an opera from Octavia Butler's book, Parable of the Sower. And she decided to have this concert at Lincoln Center where there would be some of the songs, but then she would also have different people offer their songs for the living. And so I read something that I had written about freedom. It wasn't this, but clearly there's a theme. Freedom is something that I'm always thinking about. My mind stayed on freedom, as the freedom singers would say. And it was so beautiful to be a part of that, because not only did Toshi invite some of us to offer words, but she invited a whole self-selected choir of people. So there's like people from all over New York City in the weeks leading up to it had gathered as a choir and like rehearsed. And so it was beautiful. It was like people processed in, and this incredible artist, Ebony Noel Golden, created this procession. And then it was like an ocean of people that, it was a really, really beautiful experience. And I'm really grateful that I was able to be a part of it.
Was it recorded?
That's a good question. I know it was very photographed because I shared the photos, and some people, you know, like I saw some people posted some of their like phone recordings, but I do think that the whole thing must be recorded, but I don't think it's on the internet yet. So I can check in about whether it is going to be shared on the internet. It was beautiful to be able to be a part of that. And so, yeah, my vision is to keep writing. I, speaking of what ifs, I was like, what if my whole life is a writing retreat? You know, like, what if it's not like, oh, you go away and you have a writing retreat? Like, what if my whole life is a writing retreat? And you know how a writing retreat is, where you have abundant space to do your writing, whatever aspect of it is, whether it's the research or whether it's the actual writing things down or just meditating on it or thinking about it or structuring it. And then also having the conversations that support you to do that writing, right? This is one of those conversations. So thank you for being part of my writing retreat. And what it means to just embody that. So Sean Godari and I, in my bio, it mentions the Mobile Homecoming Project, which is a listening project, and it's an experiential archive, which is really about being together. Like, what's the archival learning that we have from being together? And it centers on Black LGBTQ folks, and we have a space called Soul Sanctuary, which is where we're incubating the idea, and it's 11 acres of land. It's freedom land. It literally, there's a train track that is the boundary of the land, which is the track that the folks follow to leave the plantation that's down the other side of the tracks. It's really healing to be in relationship with the land itself, and then to gather there in liberatory ways, and also have our expansive and expanding Black feminist library there. So yeah, I think that this is being a channel and a vessel for love is what I'm up to. It's what I'm intending. And I understand that can take many different forms. There's exciting things happening with, like, you know, National Geographic potentially being like, where do you want to go to be near marine mammals, or to talk about these different experiences, or what are ways I get to collaborate with the organization called Black and Marine Science, which is all these people who really are marine scientists who decided that this book was going to be the book that they all read and discussed. And I get to be part of something called Whale Week, which is this group of amazing women in Georgia and South Carolina that win the North Atlantic right whale, which is a whale that, in terms of my Shinnecock ancestry through Grandma Lydia, Shinnecock have been in sacred relationship with the North Atlantic right whale for centuries, and they're very endangered at this time. And they do their mating off the sea islands of Georgia and South Carolina. And there's this incredible group of women who has this Whale Week just celebration of that. Like they really are just holding space, speaking of listening, for the fertility of these whales and for the health of the baby whales and, you know, all of that. And they've invited me to be part of what they do. So I think that what I am learning is that if I, in my writing practice, I'm in the bravest ceremony I can possibly be in, it will be the connecting point, you know, to all of these miracles that I get to participate in and to support. And we're very engaged in the process of what does it mean to create structure for that? What does it mean to create, in our case, gathering space, you know, for that, that is sustained gathering space that we can gather at again and again and again over the years. What does it mean to practice that with our living and allow it to be visible in a way that shifts people's ideas of what is possible?
Oh, gorgeous.
All I can say is, wow.
You know, it's interesting because I think we are coming near. I don't know how many questions you have left, Glenn. I have two questions left, I think.
Go for it.
I'm not promising it's only two questions, but I think it's only two questions. Or comments even. You know, one is just sharing about when you came and stayed with me.
Yes.
And so I live in Toronto, and you were still quite young at the time. You were studying. I don't remember what you were studying. I don't remember if you were in your master's program or what at the time.
I think I might have just started a PhD program then.
Okay.
I went directly from undergrad, so I didn't do a master's program. So yeah.
Okay, got you. Yeah. Oh, I got it. I got it. You know, like that. Two snaps. And
just in terms of time, I wasn't. But yeah, I did do that. I did that.
Honestly, it didn't surprise me. And you called me. I mean, we really hadn't had a relationship before that. And you called me up out of the blue, and I had seen you around. I was like, okay, one of the young people for the summit. And you were like, yeah, can I stay at your place? And I was like, I don't know you.
Who are you? I was like, but you're part of my family because you're part of the summit.
So. That's right. That's right.
And you came and you stayed and you handled yourself. I was not the most gracious host.
But oh, I thought you were
a gracious guest. I was like, yeah, can you get your way? Can you make your way from the airport to my place? I don't know how I can tell you how to catch a cab or something. Like I was just so in that time I was so busy, I didn't know how I was going to be able to negotiate supporting you. But you came and you handled your stuff. You were like, oh, I'm going and I'm getting here and I'm going up to the university and you just found your way and like, I'll be back at such and such a time. I was like, all right, girl, go do your thing. And you were so focused and intentional and powerful. Like you were young and powerful. Like just as a space and as an energy and as a being, you just walked with power. I was like, nobody needs to worry about her. Nobody needs to worry about her. She's got life by the handle. and you're living that life beautifully, beautifully living that life. So I just appreciate actually having experienced that with you. So thank you for calling me up and staying with me.
Thank you for having me, for real. I mean, there are miracles that I still remember from that time, because I went to the Toronto Women's Bookstore for the first time. In fact, I found a book from somebody a poet, Leah Lakshmi Pepsina Samarasinha, who's become a very close friend and dear collaborator, but I found her work because I was in that bookstore. There was a whole conference called Diasporic Hegemonies I didn't even know was happening, that was happening that same time that I was there, and then I was able to go to it. And I mean, there's other mentorships in my life that came from being at that conference. It was miraculous. And you made it possible by being like, I don't know you, and I have to work. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but you can stay here, because I wouldn't have been able to afford to pay to stay in a hotel and, you know, just be like, I'm going to be in the library. I'm going to research this. I'm going to look at this. You really gave me access to Toronto in a way that I needed, because what I was studying was Caribbean women's writing in diaspora. And it was really important for me to be able to see like how that had happened in Toronto. It has continued to influence my work to this day. So I really, really appreciate you being like, speaking of unpredictable results, like, you know, just saying yes. Just saying yes anyway. I really appreciate that.
It was beautiful. It was wonderful having you. Really, really was. And my next question, which might be the last question. What are two or three wishes that you have for the world right now?
My number one wish is for everyone to know that they are loved. Just know it. That's what I want. And that's what I'm showing up for. You know, that's, I hope that my life can help make that possible at whatever scale it's supposed to make that possible. And I'm like, I'm good. But if I get three, that's one. But what an abundance that I could have three. I also wish, and you spoke to this earlier, Jackie Grace, that as a so-called species, even though we're interdependent with all species, that our species could really be in alignment with all life. Yes. Really moving in a life-giving way. And my third wish would be, I'm like, what is not included in those first two wishes? I think my third wish would be, I guess it, going along with the connection to all life and going along with the being loved, that we could all really access love on an intergenerational scale. Yes, backwards and forwards. I think that that's maybe even just a specification of that first wish about love. But those are my wishes for the world. And I think that everything else could just flow through that.
Oh, that's really, really beautiful. And very much in alignment with the energies that are leading us to Antigua, where the conversation is very much about love.
Oh, wonderful.
Love and health. And I might add that this dual location. So it's going to be Antigua and Buffalo, New York.
Oh, great.
So
and virtual.
So we're having three offerings available this time.
Simultaneously.
Cool. And Jackie Grace, I might add that the young people that attend all come out with that power that you recognize in Alexa. Alexis is particularly versed in the expression, the outwardly expression. But if you look at any of the youth that have come out of the Youth Summit, all kinds of different expressions. Some are in business. Some are doing dance, but contributing positive. And I say that it part of it had to do with having their own space to really allow themselves to develop what they wanted to develop, not somebody telling them what to develop or what they should be working on. They had an opportunity to invent for themselves the possibility of what they saw and what they were interested in. And you know, I'm reminded of the radio broadcast. That was another one of yours, I believe, Alexa.
Oh yeah, Alexis,
the radio broadcast, and just so many. There's so many contributions that were available in the space. And if you don't have any, you have any other questions, Jackie Grace?
I don't. I'm ready to complete.
Okay, good. So, Alexis, thank you for being the demonstration of love. Mm. I am so clear. And I saw that, you know, bright light in you. As I saw with so many, all of the youth, you know, just so many bright lights coming together and kind of working it out and making it happen and allowing yourself to have a phenomenal life. Mm. So thank you for the accepting the invitation to be part of the Youth Summit and to take it out in the world. Because here at the International Black Summit, we're about taking it out to the world so that we can transform the universe. And, you know, you're for me, you're clearly one of the demonstrations and one of the soldiers that are making it happen out in the world. So just thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being a demonstration. And thank you for the opportunity for me to be in the rooms with you as a young person to train me in being an adult youth facilitator. So thank you.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you so much for having this. Thank you for having me here. And just thank you for your powerful, the light of your listening. You know, for me, from a young age, it means so much to be held in that way, to be listened for, like listening for our greatness is huge. And then also just the reflection of watching people who are ahead of you, you know, facing other stages of life, being self-reflective and going deep and being open to unpredictable possibilities. It means so much to see that and not be like, well, we're making it up ourselves, but to understand like, no, this is something that's possible. And it's possible to go through life this way. I really appreciate each of you and all of the folks who have been part of my experience at the International Black Summit for modeling that.
Thank you. And may you be blessed with all your future endeavors.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
And prayers to your father-in-law. Prayers to your father-in-law.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'll definitely pass that along. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Good. Good.
Okay. So thank you everyone for being with us this evening. We hope that you enjoyed this conversation and interview with Alexis Pauline Gumbs. For more information about the International Black Summit, you can find us at our website at www.blacksummit.org. That's www.blacksummit.org. There's also a contact page there that you can put your information in if you'd like to hear from us or to join us. We are here once a month doing this podcast, and every other Sunday, we are here having a Summit Share conversation session. So you can join us there too. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night.